I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Leif Ove Andsnes, who's back in Boston after a few years now, with the Grieg Concerto. And Leif, I think that anyone who loves piano music has to think, if Leif is playing the Grieg Concerto, I have to be there. It's something that you're really associated with. So thanks for taking a little bit of time to talk with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Well, the thing is, I haven't played the Grieg Concerto for 12 years until a couple of months ago. But you're right. I mean, it was my piece very much when I started my career, and I played it as my debut piece with so many orchestras. And, you know, I played it for 4 or 5 years, and then I told my manager, how can I get away from this piece? Because because everybody asks me to play it. And we decided, okay, I'll put it away. And after that, actually, I only played it for a couple of very short periods. And then, as I said, now not for 12 years. And I'm coming back to it this fall, playing it a lot and really enjoying it.
What is it that drew you back to it? Why after a period of time, did you come back around to it?
Well, there were a few things. And one of them was that it's actually this year the 150th anniversary of the first performance of the piece. And I was asked to do a special project in Copenhagen, where there was the very first performance of the piece. And secondly, there was another anniversary. The Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra at home has the 100th anniversary, and they asked me to go on a long European tour. The Grieg Concerto was played in their very first concert. And there were different historical reasons. But more than that, I started getting curious how it was to play it again, actually.
Do you feel like it is a different piece to you now than it was 12 years ago?
It's not a different piece, but I'm surprised how joyful it is to work on it now, how I enjoy to play it. And I'm again struck by how potent a concert piece it is, how wonderful it is. I mean, it's not by chance that this piece became very popular. There is a flow in his writing at this point. He was only 25, and I love sort of his writing from the sort of end of his studies in, when he's about 20 and towards this piece. He writes his first piano sonata, his only piano sonata, his first violin sonata, his first set of lyric pieces. They have such an innocent inspiration about them. And then this comes around, and it becomes it's the peak. And as a matter of fact, after this piece, it became more difficult for him. He had long periods where he couldn't write, and he found everything more difficult. I mean, there are wonderful pieces later on as well, but it became hard for him. And this remains his piece, his biggest piece, and his most successful piece in large form.
Yeah, to whatever degree it reflects the character and of Norway, not just of Grieg himself. Is there a way, do you think, as someone who was born there and still lives in Norway, is there a way that it reflects anything about what continues to be Norway? Or in other words, would Grieg kind of recognize the Norway of today and still sort of feel like his music comes out of that world?
Good question. Actually, I was just at Grieg's house last weekend and tried his piano because it has gotten new hammers. It had the same hammers now for 60 years.
You made a recording on this instrument, didn't you?
I did make the recording about 20 years on this instrument, and now the hammers have gotten quite tired, and they've changed the hammers, and I was a little nervous that it would lose some of its sort of patina, so the old beautiful sound that it had, but actually that's not the case. The new flexible hammers made it even more beautiful, and I'm not sure Grieg would have been happy to be in this place today, because today this place is it's still a very beautiful place by the fjord, but you can see houses everywhere around, and it is at this time there were no houses. I mean, there were just couple of neighbors, you know, his close friends. Not sure he would be happy about that. The rest of Norway, I think he would be quite shocked what has happened. Maybe happy about some developments and the fact that it's become so much more international because he always also was struggling with the provincialism back home. Yeah, difficult to tell. Is this piece Norwegian? Yes, it is. But it's also heavily influenced by the German Romantics, of course. I mean, it's the first movement is really built on the Schumann Concerto. On the first movement, the Schumann Concerto has the same descending figures in the beginning, the same way of presenting the first theme first in the winds, then in the piano. Development is very similar. There are so many things. But for me, the fascination is how different the music is and feels. Because where Schumann is a very urban and sophisticated composition, there is a sort of force of nature about the Grieg Concerto. And yes, in that sense, maybe there is something from Norway, from the nature, from the... He loved the mountains. I mean, he grew up by the coast, the weather, you know, the wind, the ocean. There is something very strong from nature in this piece.
So your life as a person who flies all over, playing concerts around the world, but also with a family and a base in Norway, I often wonder... for people who do what you do, which I'm always astounded by, the fact that you maintain a sort of sanity amidst that world, do you ever, do you still look for mentors or feedback? Do you go to people to hear reaction to your playing? I mean, outside of critics and audiences, are there people that you, not to name names or anything, but I mean, how important is that for you at this particular part of your career and your life?
I think we are students our whole lives, I have some people, not many, but I have some people that I trust the instincts of, and I will play for them, ask their opinion. Can you come to this concert and give me an honest opinion? That's important for me. It's important to have some people that I know will be very honest and. Because I get to hear, of course, that, oh, how great it was, how beautiful, well, you know, all these things, and that's very nice. But some, you know, I maybe don't get to hear so directly the, you know, criticism or what might not work. And music is a subjective thing, but nevertheless, when somebody knows something and feels something very deep and has right instincts, then I want to hear it. When it's not working as well. So yes, I still love to be a student when I can.
Well, and you also you have in the past run a chamber music festival. Now you have a different one, mm-hmm. and so you keep in contact with a lot of people on a more intimate basis musically.
Sure.
But is there anything we were just talking before turning on the recorder? I mean, you're friends with Marc-André Hamelin and some other pianists. I mean, is there anything? This sort of, I don't mean this to be a trick question. It's just really, I'm curious. Like, when you talk to people that do what you do, is there something that maybe you all understand that the rest of us don't understand, or is there anything about your lives that you relate to that maybe others of us wouldn't quite get?
Yeah, I mean, I do find that it's always inspiring and. Wonderful to speak with some people who actually live this kind of life, which is an unusual one, and understand the challenges and the challenge of coming home from a tour completely empty, then having to study the piece for the next thing immediately, or the pieces, the very challenging piece I have to play in 4 months or whatever, and this kind of building this up, and at the same time trying to. Have a family and all these kind of things. I mean, to speak with somebody who really understands it from within, of course, that's very nice, special. And these festivals, then when you actually have a possibility to meet other colleagues and so on, that's a welcoming thing for me. I mean, I'm not doing many of these because I'm mostly traveling as a soloist. But yes, I love to spend time with my colleagues.
Yeah. So your most recent recording is Chopin, and you recorded the four ballades and some of the nocturnes. And I mean, these are pieces I imagine that you've played for a long time. The ballades are I think something that a lot of pianists grapple with, at least as they're learning. Maybe they'll come back to them later to perform. But what was it about these four ballades that you felt like now was the right time for you to record them?
I'm not sure one ever feels that it's the right time with such great music, but I had to, so I had to push myself and think, okay, now is the time of the ballads. And I've loved these pieces since I was 11, 12 years old. I had a cassette, you know, at home, which I listened to day and night. I remember I thought it was the most beautiful music I'd ever heard, and I still think it is. It's just sort of the peak of romanticism for what is written for the piano. And I learned them at different stages. The fourth ballad was the one that I had such a respect for, and I thought, well, will I ever get the courage to learn it? And so I learned that 6 or 7 years ago only, and played it a lot in concert. And also, it's such an emotional piece. It sounds ridiculous, but I had problems not crying in the first two performances I played it. And you're not a good actor if you're crying from your own performance, you know. And neither are you a good musician if you get that emotional. But it's so heartbreaking for me, that the theme of the fourth ballad, and that he could give voice to so much. And you know, you have innocent beauty, and then you have this pain suddenly, which is incredible. For me, he's still an underrated composer, Chopin.
I'm not a pianist. My instrument when I played professionally was trumpet. Mm-hmm. There aren't many pieces of any other instrument that make me jealous of that instrument, but the fourth ballade is one of them. It's one that if I could only play that, I would just sort of, it'd be a dream, you know, because I feel the same way. It's just so intensely emotional. But as I understand, you know, you also included the nocturnes. Maybe what I read is that you included them as sort of almost cool down pieces after this intense yeah. emotionality of the ballad.
Yeah, well, in a way, simplified, that's how I feel that. I have never felt that the four ballads, one after the other, is a very successful thing to play in concert. I've never done that myself. I've always then played a few waltzes, mazurkas, whatever, and then ballads in the middle or at the end, or maybe two of them more. But all four, and I mean, they were never meant as a cycle, and they are such intense masterpieces. And then, of course, the nocturnes are also intense, but they provide a little more breathing, and they are not so intensely changing from one character to the other as the ballads are all the time. So my idea was to then intersperse the ballads with nocturnes.
Well, Leif of Ansnes, it's great to have you back in Boston. I'm so thrilled you're here. I'm thrilled you're doing Grieg. And thrilled you're doing Grieg again after not doing it. But now I feel really especially lucky that you're here. So thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was very nice.